You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. I'm in my studio as always. We're near the lake, folks, but it is hot. It is hot. It is double digits over here by the lake. It's usually cooler by the lake, but I don't know. We were out earlier today, and it was like walking in an oven. It's totally hot, but like I say, every day when it's hot like this, make sure you drink plenty of liquids. Water is if you're going to drink anything, drink water, put it that way. And try to stay out of the heat as much as you can. And some of us have to be out here. We work in this stuff. So we have to be careful, you know, drink a lot of liquids, water. The best thing to drink is water. Okay. But drink it, but, you know, moderately. However, if you don't have to be out here in this heat, stay in the house. I mean, get yourself a really good fan or air conditioning. If you can't have a fan or you don't have air conditioning, then try to go to some place, a public place with air conditioning. There's a lot of places around here that where you can go and cool off, you know, because this is dangerous heat. There's always that possibility of heat stroke. And we want to make sure we want to update and talk to our elderly, the older people who may have respiratory problems, breathing problems, to stay out of the heat. It is dangerous. It is dangerous. I'm hearing that tomorrow and on into the week, it's going to be a little cooler. Not much. A little. The 90s will be back and the triple digits in the city of Chicago. So I hope wherever you are, you're staying cool, staying out of the weather. Try not to exhaust yourself too much and doing too many strenuous things out here in this hot, burning sun. And it's burning, folks. It's a good thing that we're heading into the evening, because usually into the evening it gets a little cooler, but sometimes it doesn't. It just gets a little bit more muggier. It gets even hotter. It's just that the sun is not burning down on you in the evening as much as it is during up in the day, like in the afternoon. So it is pretty hot. So my thing is, even myself, you know, trying to stay out of the heat as much as possible, because I know what it can do. But like I said, a lot of us have to be out here in the weather, but try not to be out here too long. Even riding a bike or jogging, even walking can be dangerous when you're doing it in this extreme heat. So Try not to be out there too long. Try not to overexert yourself. Drink plenty of liquids. And just use some common sense, okay? But because this show is all about making the world a better place. We don't want to see people sick. We don't want to see people in the hospital. We don't want to see people dying of heat stroke. And we don't want to see kids, animals locked in hot cars. Somehow this is just one of those things some people just can't get through their thick skulls. Do not leave a baby in a hot car. Do not leave your pet in a hot car. It's not a good thing to do. You know, it's just not a good thing to do. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Amazon.com. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me right here on Black Talk Radio, where you're listening to me right now. And I'm on Twitter. What is the other thing? Twitter, LinkedIn. Okay, I'm all over the place. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for being with me. Thanks for listening. And I appreciate it all. Believe me, I do appreciate it all. And I love what I do. It's fun. If it wasn't fun, if I didn't love it, folks, I would not do this. You know, I don't think anybody should do anything that's not fun or it's not exciting. It's got to be fun. It's got to be exciting. Because if it's fun and exciting for you, then it's going to be fun and exciting to your listeners, to your audience. They're going to enjoy it. But first of all, before they can enjoy it, you have to make sure that you enjoy it, you know. And that's the way it is. Like what you do, love what you do, and other people will love what you do. All right, you've been listening to my show, George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back. Let's see what we got here. Let's scroll down. Scroll, go, 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 go. All right. Simone Biles. I mean, the world has heard of this young lady by now. She's 19 years old. She just won a gold medal. And this lady, I just got through watching her doing a few of her gymnastic techniques. And this young lady, she's 19. She's still a teenager, but in a lot of our eyes, she's a young lady. And she's only 5'9". She's short, but she's tall in stature. Believe me, she is one of the greatest gymnasts ever. And that's not just me saying this. Simone Biles, simply the greatest gymnast ever. And a lot of us feel that way. You know, she is the best. And she's just so sweet and she's so cute. And she's really, really, and she's sounds very, very educated and knowledgeable about her sport. And I envy her. And I am a fan. I think she's one of the greatest. And I'm going to be watching her tonight because this is where she's going to seal. This is where she's going to win gold. She's won gold already, but, you know, they're going to kind of repeat it on television and let us all see how she did it, even though we know how she did it. She did it through pure talent, and she did it because it was fun. Just like I just got through saying, do things for yourself and do it for fun. Make it fun. I'm a writer. I wouldn't write if it wasn't fun. I cannot put pen to paper or my fingers on a computer in a word processing setting to write a story or a book without it being fun. The fun part actually makes me want to continue to write because I'm reading what I wrote and I'm laughing. I'm saying, wow, this is great. It has to be fun. Whatever you do, no matter what you do, legitimately, make it fun. It has to be fun. And Simone Biles just got through saying in an interview that she does what she does because it's fun. She likes it. And now she's the greatest in the entire world. And that's no lie. That is no. If you don't know Simone Biles, if you haven't heard, check out. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of videos of her during the Olympics on YouTube, reruns, you know, repeating what she's done, repeating her wins. Go check her out. Check her out. And she's going to be on tonight. I think this is going to be her last leg because she's going to be going for gold, even though she this will be a repeat. She's already a gold medal winner. She has her gold. But this piece tonight that you're going to see. To getting that gold medal. And that's one of the greatest things ever. And I want to say again, with Olympic gold, USA Simone Biles simply is the greatest ever. And so far, in a way better than the rest of the world, she hasn't even trailed in a competition in almost 3 years. For 3 years, she's been the best, but now she's simply the greatest. She found herself behind Russia with history in jeopardy, was supposedly unbeatable. Russia was supposed to be unbeatable, but Biles did it. She totally did it. Simone Biles cemented her status as the greatest gymnast of all time Thursday, which is today. Winning the Olympic all-time title in a rout. She routed her competition. She finished 2.1 points ahead of final five teammate Ali. By far her largest margin of victory in her 3 year and 3 years and counting. So what do they mean 3 years and counting is that possibly 4 years from now, the next Olympics, she'll also be a contestant, and she will go for Olympic gold again in the next 4 years, which is 2020. So I'm going to be right there. She is so great. She's so sweet. She's got a great attitude, a great way of where she's of looking at this entire thing. And she's just an all around super person. I'm pretty sure that Simone Biles is going to be in every commercial that comes up on television. She's going to be in every newspaper. She's going to be on every morning show, everybody's show. I'm hoping to have her on my show and, you know, wishful thinking. But hey, she's going to be famous. She's going to make a lot of money. And a lot of people were downing her and dissing her because she was adopted. That's a shame. The haters are going to find anything they can to try to bring someone down who is successful. It happens. They're trying to bring her down because she's adopted. So what? Big deal. The persons who adopted her, they are the ones who are responsible for her getting this far. They are responsible for her getting this far, enabling her to win the gold medal. So the haters out there who are trying to belittle her because she's adopted, you guys can go straight to hell. Go straight to hell. This is a great, beautiful, and wonderful, talented young lady whom I hope to see next 4 years. At least it says here that she may participate. Okay, I'm going to quote. There's a quote I want to read from her. When people said an athlete was the best ever, I always say no. Okay, all right. It's a lot of bad words in here, so I'm not gonna say anymore. But that's Simone Biles. She's going to be someone to reckon with, even long after these Olympics are over. We will never stop hearing her name. We will never stop seeing videos and her gymnastic talents. They're going to be all over the TV, the newspapers, internet. I mean, you name it, social media. She is going to be phenomenal. But do not forget for one thing, do not forget for one iota that there will not be haters. There's going to be haters. Jealous ass people who do not have talent of their own, people who are doing nothing. And I hope she can stand tall and take it and not let this happen. Do not let this happen. But it's going to happen. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We've been talking about the greatest gymnast of all time, Simone Biles. And I've talked about her before on the show, but this is just phenomenal. This girl is just good. And this is what I've been saying. If you have talent, hey, get it out. Let us see it. Let us see your talent. Who knows? You could be a gymnast. You could go to the, you can go to the, that's your dream if that's what you want to do. We all have dreams, but we have to be the ones who set those dreams in motion. I mean, if you have a dream to be something or to do something in life, you know, you're going to have to get out there and make some effort in trying to make those dreams come true. You can't sit back and sit down and say, I wish this and I want this and I want that and I wish this. You got to get out there and put some effort in into whatever you want to be. Nobody's going to bring you anything. Nobody's going to knock on your door and give you a gold medal. You got to get out there and win it. You got to get out there and win. You got to have confidence in yourself. You got to have that talent. You got to have people behind you, just like Simone Biles. Her parents were behind her. They were her greatest supporters. Her adopted family was behind her. They were her greatest supporters. They are the reasons why she won this goal. I mean, they saw something in her as a little girl. She was flipping all over the house, and they saw something in her, you know, and they pushed her, and they pushed her, and I think they're the greatest parents in the world, of the greatest gymnasts in the world. What can I say, folks? Simone Biles, I am a fan. I totally am a fan, because I think she's the greatest. I mean, I'm not saying this just because other people are saying it. I'm saying it because I have watched her in action, and I've watched a lot of the other gymnasts in action. They're good too, but however, Simone is the best. She's the best. All right, we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Good at war. I've had a lot of wars of my own. I'm really good at war. I love war in a certain way.
Please welcome Martin O'Malley from Maryland.
Fellow American, my fellow Americans, President of the United States is the toughest job in the world. And I come here before you as a man who knows Hillary Clinton well. I have worked alongside her, and I have competed against her. And I'm here to tell you that Hillary Clinton is as tough as they come. She will stand up to ISIS. She will stand up to the Russians. And with Tim Kaine at her side, she will never stop fighting for our children and our families, because Hillary Clinton knows when our families are strong, America is strong. Now, Donald Trump, he's a different story. He will not fight for us. He feeds off of economic fears and failures, stirs up false divisions and ancient hates, turns anger into a political weapon. But my friends, anger never fed a hungry child, did it? Anger never protected a family's home or sent a kid to college. Anger never built a great republic. I say, to hell with Trump's American nightmare. We believe in the American dream. We believe, as Hillary Clinton believes, that no American family who works hard should have to raise their children in poverty. Donald Trump, on the other hand, has actually said, quote, wages are too high. Wages are too high. Really, Donald? I'll tell you what's too high. College tuition is too high. I'll tell you what's too high. The cost of childcare, that's too high. The number of American children who live in poverty, that's too high. Donald Trump's opinion of himself, that's way too high. You see, actually, Donald, American wages, in fact, are too low. Our economy isn't money. It is people. It is all of our people. And Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine will fight to make sure that every family who's willing to work hard can actually get ahead again in America. On climate change, like you and me, and in fact, like our children and grandchildren, Hillary Clinton believes in science. She understands that climate change is not only a real threat, it's also the greatest job creation opportunity to come to the United States in 100 years. Now, Donald Trump, on the other hand, does not believe in science. He says, and again I quote, "The concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese." I'll tell you what, if the Chinese were really capable of designing some kind of diabolical farce to hurt America, they wouldn't invent global warming, they'd invent Donald Trump. This much we know for sure. Donald Trump has been a bully his whole life. But here's what I learned in elementary school on the playgrounds. Bullies are really just cowards in disguise. The America we love does not engage in torture. The America we love does not build walls and shameful for-profit prisons. The America we love does not lock up women and children in disgraceful immigrant detention camps. Unlike that immigrant-bashing carnival barker Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton understands the enduring symbol of the United States of America is not the barbed wire fence. It is the Statue of Liberty. And so, my fellow Democrats, anger and fear had their moment last week, but now it is our time. Time to stand up for each other. Stand up for our shared promise. Stand up for the goodness and the hope in every American heart. It's time to put a bully racist in his place and a tough woman in hers. The White House, Hillary Clinton, Tim Kaine, forward together, stronger together. The country we carry in our hearts is waiting.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Well, here's the latest Donald Trump salvo. Donald Trump is blaming President Obama. Can you believe it? Saying that he and Hillary Clinton are the founders of ISIS. That is dead wrong. That's another lie. Some people are saying, well, that's false. That's another tattletale. That's another non-truth. That's a lie. Put it, just say it plain and simple. The man is lying again. Donald, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And he doubles down on these lies. A lot of people feel that it was George Bush who created ISIS. Then there's another thug somewhere within the regime of ISIS, somewhere in Iraq, who created ISIS. Obama has been bombing the hell out of ISIS. I mean, there's no president in history has done as much bombing as Obama. Forget about the collateral damage, but still in all, that's very stupid, and that's a total lie. Obama and his administration, from my understanding, they're not even commenting on this. And you know what? I don't even blame them. I wouldn't comment on it either, because it's totally ridiculous. But Donald Trump, the guy is doubling down on this, that Hillary Clinton, especially Obama, created ISIS. He's saying that Hillary Clinton created ISIS because she voted for the Iraq war. That's stupid. In that case, everybody who voted for the Iraq war created ISIS, even the Republicans. They voted for the Iraq war. It was the majority of them guys. So they also created ISIS. Donald Trump doesn't think before he speaks. He's worse than a three-year-old child. He doesn't think. He doesn't realize the consequences of some of the things he says. On an animated photograph on social media where Donald Trump, in this photograph, Donald Trump was sitting down with his legs straight out, feet straight up, and there was two guns in his hands. He was pointing at his feet, and he was shooting holes.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let me see if we can do this.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, let's go to the phones. Ah, she hung up. Okay, all right. Okay, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's go to a commercial. All right, we're back. We are back. Hello, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, George. This is Lisa Orban.
Yeah, Lisa Orban. I'm sorry about that. We've been having some problems. It happens. So tell my audience, what do you do and what you're about?
Okay, I am an author. I've written my first book called It'll Feel Better When It Quits Hurting. It's a memoir. It starts in my childhood and it goes up to my early 20s, and I talk about my very dysfunctional family and a lot of the things that happened, and going into foster care, and then as a young adult moving out to Phoenix and surviving a very abusive relationship and getting out of it.
Oh, wow. That sounds interesting. So you're talking about your dysfunctional family. Is this an autobiography or a memoir or just a...
It's a memoir.
Okay. All right.
There's a lot of serious subjects about it. I talk about a lot of serious things. But my main goal was to try and connect my reader and make them laugh with me and see the absurdity of a lot of the situations I found myself in, and having or learning to turn things around. And even when things get bad, know that, you know, you can still laugh about it. You can still get over it. You can still work through it.
Yeah.
It's kind of mixed. My mother hated it. She wanted a bag for her head. I offered to make her one. And then she went back through a second time and reread it and realized that it was honest. It was a very honest story. And I never went out of my way to make anyone look bad or appear bad, because no one, except for my husband, who was abusive, except for him. No one really went out of their way to intentionally be bad, to be mean to me. It's just things happen, you know, and families happen and situations happen.
Yeah.
Then we don't always make the best choices in our life, and we drag our kids into it. And so when my mom went back and read it, she hated it in a way, but in a way she loved it. And it gave her some insight that I think, you know, had been lacking between the two of us for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my dad passed away a month after the book was released, and, it was very unexpected. And, so he never had a chance to read it. So I don't know what he would say. We had a really good talk right before he died, actually. I invited him out randomly for lunch one day, and we talked, and we kind of touched a little bit on the book, not the book itself, but on some of the things and a lot of the things that had happened. I did forgive him. It took me a lot of years, and it took a lot of us working together to try and repair our relationship. But we made it, and, I would really hope that my dad would have appreciated the book. I do know some of my family is very upset with me now, because with my father passing, it was kind of poor timing, but I didn't know. I couldn't read the future. things happen.
I also written a memoir, and I also included in that memoir, I mean, you cannot really write a memoir unless you writing about your family, writing something,
right.
incorporating something in there about your life, your wife, your husband or something, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I've learned, like you have, and a lot of people have, that when you write about your family or your wife, your ex-wife, your ex-husband or something, they read it. Of course, they're not going to like it. They're going to criticize it. Some of them are going to hate it, even though you're very honest when you're
right.
talking about it. You're very honest. And that's
why
in some
honest.
Cases in my memoir, I changed a lot of the names, but they knew who they were.
Yeah. Well, I come from kind of a, I mean, it's not a, I'm about 5 hours south of you. I'm in a small town named Quincy. And so, you know, it's writing this book and I use my actual name, you know, people would know, you know, I mean, so I did change the name in one case and it wasn't for mm-hmm. anonymity. It was just that there was two people with the same name. And
okay.
so I changed it just because it became confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I went by his alternate name, his middle name and, the new, mm-hmm. David and then Michael. And, but other than that, that was really the only actual name change I had in there. And
well, in my memoir,
I was going to own it.
You know, in my memoir, most of the names were the actual names, but there were one mm-hmm. or two or three that I think I've changed, you know, but they, like I said before, they knew who they were. And mm-hmm. I knew when they read it, they were going to figure it out, you know, but,
mm-hmm.
It was just something. I just had to get my life down on paper because I thought it was just kind of exciting and interesting. The good times, the bad times, the fun times, mm-hmm. the awful times, you know, most of it was just awful. But
yeah. Well, you know, if you have a very boring life or a very safe life, uh-huh. you know, you really, I mean, it's exciting to you or it's important to you, but there's no drama. You know, you need,
right.
it's almost, you know, you can't write a good memoir unless you've had a bad life.
Without drama. you're right about that. You write, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, now see for me, my friends for years had encouraged me to write it because I'm very good at verbal storytelling. And my book
yeah.
is actually mm-hmm. very reminiscent of a verbal storyteller. And,
okay.
And mostly it was because I could take these very bad situations, these very awful things that happened, and I can make people laugh, you know, and I'd have them laughing and they'd be going, I shouldn't be laughing. I mean, I should be crying. This is terrible. And I'm like, I know, but I can make it funny, you know, and that's really helped me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be serious, but you can also be humorous. Yeah,
exactly. And you mm-hmm. can, you know, and I think it, if you can find that spark of laughter, you know that you can make it through, and that's what you need to find. You know, is no matter how dark things get, and things can get really, really dark. If you can kind of find that small piece of you that goes, okay, this is ridiculous and it's absurd, and I can laugh about it. Maybe not right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
make it fun. Yeah.
But I can. You know, and so then that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm currently working on the second part of my memoirs
mm-hmm.
and that's supposed to come out in the spring. So I'm really excited about that. It's going to be called Wine Comes in Six Packs.
If you could compare yourself with another author, who would you be close to? Another humorist, you know, who writes something similar,
you know,
to you. Who would you compare yourself?
Somewhere cross between Christopher Titus and Irma Bombeck.
Yeah, you know what? I was thinking Irma Bombeck. I said, Irma Bombeck. Wow, yeah.
I mean, I loved her growing up. And I mean,
yeah,
she never gets quite
too.
As dark as I do, you know.
Yeah.
But
she was.
I think that's probably... Yeah, she really helped me kind of put some, when I was younger, put some things in perspective.
Yeah,
because you could,
exactly.
She did,
I mean,
very much put things
I remember
in perspective.
I remember going to the library, and I would see her stuff everywhere. She wrote extensively. And she was so funny. She was so funny.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of her books still.
Yeah. Yeah. She wrote extensively. Yeah. And I believe she also was a journalist or a reporter or something at a newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A journalist, I believe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And she had a gift.
Ahead. Yeah.
So I was just say she had a gift for storytelling that I appreciated.
Yeah. 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 One of the things about my memoir, I wrote my memoir because I actually wrote my memoir for my family because I wanted them to know me a lot better than what they saw mm-hmm. of me. You know, but I wanted them to know about my thoughts, my inner thoughts, not just looking at me from the outside, but I wanted to tell them about what I was on the inside because I think a lot of them didn't see that.
Right.
So I wanted to, you know, and a lot of my experiences yes. during my lifetime, they were not a part of, you know, I wrote about mm-hmm. my time in school and graduating and doing this kind of thing. And it's a pretty good book. I have been invited on a lot of radio shows to talk about it, but in some parts of it, it's just hurtful and I don't want to talk about it, you know, so.
And my book does that too. I mean, you know, there is a lot of, you know, a lot of joy and a lot of, you know, a lot of laughter, especially in the first, you know, 3/4 or so of the book. But the last chapter is very, very hard for me to write. And it's even hard for me to go back and read. And I wrote it, you know.
You're right. I don't even read mine anymore. I just let it, I mean, it's on Amazon, but, you know, whoever wants to download mm-hmm. it and read it, or they can do it. But I wouldn't go back and reread it. I think about it, but I don't go back and reread it. One of the reasons why I don't go back and reread some of my stuff, especially if it's older stuff, is because if I go back and reread it, I'm going to say to myself, wow, I could have said that better. I could have said that in another way, you know. You know,
yeah.
That's, you know, you do that. I could have said that, you know, I could have used this word instead of that word, you know, but it was written at a time where I was thinking the way I was thinking that way. That's why I wrote it that way.
Right. And I think it's, you know, like I said, to that last chapter of my life, you know, I debated heavily on whether I should keep it in or take it out because, you know, there were no light moments in it. You know, there was nothing that I could make funny. But it was very much a part of my life, and it was very much what has helped make the person I am today. I like the person I am today. And
I do too.
You know, you can't have, you know, if you start heavily editing out things like that, then it the person who I have become doesn't make any sense. And I decided that, you know, this was a very terrible experience for me, you know, when you have an abusive spouse. But maybe somewhere out there's someone struggling in that position, you know, debating on whether to stay or to leave, or maybe they have left, or they're wondering, you know, is this a relationship that's worth my life, so to speak? Oh. And maybe if my book, if they can find it, if they can read it, you know, maybe I can turn someone from that path. Already down on that path, then maybe I can help them find their way out by giving them hope.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that because I think every author, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, your duty is to try to help someone out there who maybe have gone through some of the same situations that you've written about. And mm-hmm. someone picks up your book and reads your book, it may be able to help them out in their life some kind of way.
Right. And I think, you know, because I very, very carefully did not recount and do a blow by blow of the physical abuse that I endured because let's face it, everybody knows what a punch is. They do.
You know? Everybody knows what a punch feels like.
Exactly. You know, you don't need to go into detail into that. You know, that's not the point of the story. But what mm-hmm. a lot of people don't understand is, well, how did you get into that abusive situation? You know, why did you stay? You know, were you stupid? And the answer is it's because most of the time it happens very slow and gradually, you know, and it's, it's small things. And one of the things I made a note of in my book was one of the things my ex-husband had done is he took away the mailbox key, which, you know, he said he had lost his, he took mine and said he would replace it, and he never did. And it seems like this very, very small thing. But in the large scheme, it was just one more step of taking away from me things that I needed. And so he could control the mail and he could see what I saw and he could control, you know, the bills and other things like that. And so he could manipulate me over something using something very, very small, like a key.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, and it's those little things that build up into an abusive relationship. You know, no one ever starts off, you know, getting smacked across the face and going, ooh, what a great time. And and I wanted to try and explain that to people who had never experienced that in a way that they can follow me down the rabbit hole and see the psychological changes that I'm going through and the decisions that I'm struggling to make as I, without knowing what's going to happen. You know,
on this show,
to make those good decisions.
Yeah, on this show, I've done a lot of, we've talked about domestic violence a lot. And one of the things that I have made a part of my life is trying to come up with a solution to end it, you know, because it's everywhere. It's all over the place. I mean, as we speak, talking right now, some young lady is being plummeted by some loser. And, you know, And I've always asked myself, why would someone want to stay in an abusive relationship like that? Because I always felt if a young girl or a woman stays in an abusive relationship, her abuser is going to think that she likes being abused because she keeps coming back.
No, actually, they know. They know that they don't like it. It's cyclic.
Okay.
They will, you know, you can train a person like you can train a dog. It's almost exactly the same thing. You know, when a dog does something wrong, you know, you paddle it, you tell them what's wrong, and you rub their nose in it, and you scold them. Don't do that again. You can do the same thing with a person, and you can train them, okay, in almost the exact same way. I hate to say it,
you can control
but
them.
It's true. Yeah. You can control them, and it's along the same lines. But it's, again, it's these small steps. And basically what happens is the abuser will exploit something, okay, and push, you know, the victim. And the victim will get sad and upset and mad and may even say, that's it, I'm leaving. And then what they will do is it's psychological warfare at this point. They'll break down. They'll cry. They'll bring presents. They'll bring flowers, take you out to dinner, and promise and swear they will never do it again. Never. It'll never happen.
Yeah.
And then for a little while, it won't happen. Uh-huh. And until the other person's defenses start to relax again. And then there will be this gradual buildup, and they'll take it one step further than they did before. And by this small steps forward, you eventually find yourself in a position where you are stuck. And if you have children, it becomes worse. And if you have joint accounts or if they have taken the money out of your name and you have no money or you do not have a vehicle, you know, or if they've made you quit your job, you have no means of support, you know, and suddenly you find yourself completely dependent on the person that's hurting you and you want to get away.
Yeah.
But then you start thinking, I have kids and I have to support them and I have to be able to support myself. And I, you know, if they've been out of the job market for a while and as bad as the job market is now, can I find a job? Can I support myself? Can I take care of my children? Can I take care of myself? And you start to try and balance this back and forth. Well, he promises he's never going to do it again. But, and then that's why a lot of women stay. It's because they find themselves stuck between this rock and a hard place. You know, there are some services for it, but there's not enough. And a lot of times when it comes to courts and it comes to, you know, custody of children, if the mother is a basket case, which she often is because she suffers from things like PTSD and anxiety, you know, the father will come in and say, hey, you know, I'm stable and I have a job and I have a house and look at her. She's a mess and she doesn't have a job and she has no way to support herself. So I should have the kids. And a lot of times the courts will let him have the children. And so she has lost. And so she will go back to him for the sake of her children.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And it, so, it, you know, it's not simply a matter of should I stay or should I go? You know, if it was something as simple as that, most people would go. But life isn't that simple. Yeah. You know, and
it's not.
And in this world, you need money and you need support. And a lot of times the abuser will start cutting you off from your friends and your family and your support network so that you are very isolated, you know, or perhaps move you to another area where you don't have a support network.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Lisa Orban on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and she's talking about her book. Where can we find your book?
You can find it on Amazon. It's listed as, you know, It'll Feel Better When It Quits Hurting. It will be after the 24th available on several other venues. I do know that you can find it in paperback on Barnes and Noble, and and I believe you know, I have another publisher who had just placed it in a new place, but she hasn't given me the new name for it yet. But I will be not a publisher, but an editor that I work with. Who's helping me place my book in different places. And
do you have a website?
Yes, I do. Okay. Give me one second here. It is at Pandra, pandra411.wix.com/Lisa Orban.
Wow. That sounds great. That
and
sounds wonderful.
I can,
do you have, go ahead.
I was going to say, I can also be found at Twitter at Lisa Orban Author and on Facebook and on Goodreads.
Okay. I'm on Facebook. Maybe we can be friends. Huh?
Okay.
Okay. Do you have a, we're running out of time, but do you have a short read from like an excerpt from your book?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to read the prologue to you.
Okay.
When I was in high school, I attended an Al-Anon meeting that had a guest speaker from the outside local group. Nothing unusual in and of itself, but he made an impression that has stayed with me to this day. He was a recovering alcoholic, and as he shared his story from the beginning, at the end of each little story, he would add, and then it got bad. He had a gift for making people laugh with him as he recounted all of his bad choices and the ever-increasing disasters of his life. As things escalated, seeming unable to become any worse, he would add, and then it got bad. Looking back on my life, it could be summed up much the same way. Often, at the end of each of my stories, I am sometimes almost compelled to add, and then it got bad. I am not an alcoholic, nor am I a drug addict. This isn't a story of redemption through religion or even a morality tale of bad choices. Many of the circumstances I have found myself in were beyond my control. I was simply trying to cope the best I could while maintaining a smile. This book is a bit darker than I initially intended, but I hope while reading this I can make you smile, on occasion laugh out loud, and maybe even roll your eyes at the ridiculousness of the situations I have found myself in over the years. And near the end, as you finish each section, you might, in the back of your head, hear the echo of, and then it got bad. And that's okay, because it did get bad. But in the end, I survived to tell the tale, and I do not regret any of it. This is my life, and I would not change a single line. For better or worse, this is the mostly true, fairly accurate, and almost completely factual account of my life. Some liberties have been taken to protect the somewhat innocent, and a few small embellishments have been made for the sake of a good story.
Wow. Lisa Orban on the George Wilder Jr. Show. That sounds great. Lisa, would you like a link of this show? Maybe you can put it on your website, so people can come by and listen to you on the show.
Yeah, that would be great.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for being on the show, and I'll get you that link soon after, maybe about a couple of hours. Thanks for being on the show. You were great.
Okay. And I'll be sure to put you on my website. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Bye-bye. All right, that was Lisa Orban on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is hot in Chicago, folks. It's a hot one. So if you guys stay out of the heat, a heat stroke is evident. So stay. I can barely speak. The heat is affecting my studio here, folks. So I hope you guys understand that. We've been in and out. It is so hot. It may be triple digits here, folks. I just hope it's safe where you are. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank my guest, Lisa Orban. She was great. She was wonderful. Okay, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Yeah, good evening, George. How are you doing? My name's Michael.
I'm fine, man. Thanks for being on the show.
Great. Yeah, I just wanted to sort of discuss. I don't know if you notice this, especially being in Chicago, you probably see this a lot as well, which is I'm finding that more and more of younger Black people in America, especially in major cities, have been, I feel like, too heavily influenced by the liberal mindset of woe is me. I can't do it because of quote unquote number of issues that are supposedly in my way. And thus I need to either reach out to this political activist group or I need the government to help me. And I feel like it's contributing to the destructive, self-destructive behavior we see all throughout a lot of inner city neighborhoods. And when I deal with a lot of younger people, I try to tell them, like, in a way that they can understand of, basically, what is going on in America today is a lot of people, especially like someone who bought the game Madden, like Madden's a football video game. And it's like that person took that game home and started to play it, but they didn't know the controls, they didn't know the rules, and they didn't know the strategies of the game, and they kept losing. And then the person said, well, the game must be rigged against me to lose, that's why I'm losing. When in reality, it's because you have no idea what you're doing. And so I say to them, in order to start winning at the game, you need to either get a manual and learn, or you need to meet someone who knows how to play the game and learn from them so that you can start winning. And that's similar to the circle of what's going on in America today. And it's not necessarily just Blacks, even Hispanics and whites have this problem too, of Americans seeming to not understand how good the capitalist system we have is if you know how to play the rules to be successful at it. And you don't need to go out here and demand communism like we see people doing with Bernie Sanders, or you don't need to join some political movement. What you really need to do is just learn how to, number one, develop your credit. Number two, how to secure loans from banks so that you can buy real estate or invest into a business. Number three, if you can try to get education, if that's not an option, then have the necessary work ethic to go out and work. Maybe if you need to, even two jobs, have the discipline to be able to save your money. And then number three, you know, take that personal discipline and sacrifice of going out and trying to learn and gain understanding. How, you know, use wisdom and trying to understand how to, where can I invest? What can I do with where I'm at? What can I do to grow myself? How do I get to that next level? And so I try to tell young people, your mind, you live in a country in America, you have the most economic opportunity that has ever existed ever, not just currently on the planet, but in the history of mankind. Like you and I serve common regular citizens. It's never been the case for a person like you and I who were born in poverty, for example, could actually grow out of that and get to the middle class or the upper class. That never happened ever.
Oh yeah, I've been trying to motivate young people forever to try to be the best that they can be. They're living in the greatest country in the world, and anybody can grow up to be anything they want to be, and they have every opportunity of doing that. But some people choose, you know, the wrong path. And those are the kinds of people that I'm trying to reach to try to get them on the right path, to show them that they can be great at something. We're living in the greatest country in the world where that is can be realized. But we have to reach those people if this is what you're talking about.
Right, and I don't know if you have if you're a Christian or have a Christian background at all, but I was really surprised when I actually, because I used to be an atheist, and when I started to read the Bible, I was amazed how God really, both God in the Old Testament and Jesus in the New Testament, really focused in on what they called the worthless shepherds, or the wolves in sheep's clothing who devour the flock, who take advantage of people, weaker people. Maybe people who don't know or maybe ignorant to certain things. and they exploit them to their advantage. And it, whether it was through religious means or through economic means or through corrupt justice systems. And I was blown away by how much you see that throughout the whole Bible, God directly coming against it. And what I see, especially today, is a lot of, in the Black community, a lot of what I call social justice pimps. And what I mean by that is posed injustice, right? Like, let's take Black Lives Matter as an example of what I mean by that. They come in and they present this supposed dilemma. And what they do is they try to convince all these people, particularly young people who are impressionable and don't really have the necessary perspective of life to know what even they're getting into. And they take them and they convince them that if you join their political movement, that you'll somehow gain this level of freedom or economic wealth that you otherwise couldn't have if you hadn't joined them. And I just recently looked at their actual webpage for Black Lives Matter and looked at the demands that they just put out. And if you examine them, especially the economic ones, it's complete Marxist communism, like the whole thing. And I was like, what is this? This is total BS. You're basically trying to convince young people in America that the current capitalist system that has been the greatest wealth-creating engine ever.
So you saw this on their webpage?
It's on their webpage. They just recently, it's been about 2 weeks now, they put out a list of demands.
Okay, I got to go check that out because I got to go check that out because my understanding about Black Lives Matters, this is just a group of young people, college people, students, and basically, I know sometimes the bad guys can infiltrate the groups and call themselves Black Lives Matters. That happens, but we have to understand that Black Lives Matters, they are basically, they are not anti-police. They are anti-police brutality. And
doesn't hold up. And I'll show what I mean by that. If you look at the statistics from 1990 to 2011, that's almost a 21-year sample size. During that time period, we had 1,200 and change number of African Americans killed by police officers. During that same time period, you had over 2,200 whites that were killed by police officers. They would never talk about that because that goes against their narrative. And not only that, let's look at some of the people that they're coming out here for, whether it's Michael Brown, whether it was a young man in Baltimore, or the other young man just recently, the guy in Staten Island who had gotten the chokehold with the police officer. And if we look at all three of those cases, what do you see? First and foremost, you see an individual with extensive criminal history. Secondly, you see somebody resisting arrest.
I totally agree.
And what I try to tell all young people, whether they're Black or anything, but specifically Black people, is number one, never put yourself in a position where you have to deal with a police officer. Now, if that happens, okay, if you get to that point where you have to actually deal with a cop, now once you're at that point, don't do the foolishness of trying to resist arrest, because the minute you resist arrest, you're giving permission to that police officer to now physically harm you.
I totally agree with what you're saying. I totally agree. A lot of African-American youth put themselves in a situation where they are can be shot or will be shot or is shot. They put themselves in that situation, but that doesn't explain the overzealous, the trigger-happy police officers who gunning down Black people who are unarmed. You know, I understand
that's been blown up by the media to make it seem like it's a huge thing when in reality, it's actually a smaller number. And let's take Michael Brown, for example, and just to show you the games that people play. The narrative became about Michael Brown that he had his hands up and he was basically in a position of surrender and was willing to be arrested and was being compliant. That's what the narrative was. And the narrative was the cops still shot him anyway. That's what became everyone ran with. That's why you saw those T-shirts that said hands up, don't shoot. And everyone had that hands up thing. And that became the thing. But the Department of Justice came out after examining it and had the eyewitness testimony of both everyone at the scene and the majority of them were Blacks themselves who said, this is the record, this is not my opinion, this is what the DOJ put out by Eric Holder from the Department of Justice, was that Michael Brown physically charged the police officer, was wrestling him, and was trying to take his gun out of his holster. That's what led to that. And I tell all young people, I say this, if you want to learn about American law, go study go see what the laws are for police officers when it comes to individuals resisting arrest and what they're allowed to do legally. This is what a lot of people need to understand. The minute you resist arrest with a police officer, you've now given him permission to, he has the permission to physically restrain you, basically by any means necessary, which includes chokehold,
yeah,
beating you down with a baton, and if necessary, using lethal force if the threat is considered is serious enough. And I tell people, because I have a military background,
when someone is physically attacking you. You think someone running away from a cop, you think someone running away from a cop is putting that cop's life in danger as so that cop can shoot this person 16 times in the back?
Yeah, then in that case, when the individual in South Carolina who got shot running, that's different. Now, that was an unjust thing. And that's why that
happened in Chicago, too.
Consequences.
It happened in Chicago.
In that case, yeah. So in those cases, when those happen, and they're rare, they're not frequent as people try to make it seem like it is, those individuals get held accountable and punished. But people get upset, for example, when, let's say, the Rodney King situation or with Michael Brown, when they felt like, why were those police officers brought to justice? The reason they weren't is because people didn't examine what the actual evidence what took place, like with Rodney King. No one talks about the fact that Rodney King was high on PCP and drunk on alcohol. And for those who know, when you deal with somebody who's high on PCP, is that that person is not responsive to pain. That's why no matter how many times they hit him, he wouldn't basically give up. Because when you're high on PCP, you don't feel pain.
All right, we're running out of time. We're running out of time. I want to thank you for your call. It was very insightful. Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's take a break right here. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, welcome back to the show. I want to thank my guest, author Lisa Orban, talks of domestic violence. You know what? When someone calls into the show or I have a guest on the show and they're talking about domestic violence, it is a subject that I have written about, and it is a subject that's close to my heart because I cannot fathom a woman going back to somebody who beats them, abused them. But I can understand all the reasons for those kinds of things, but it doesn't really, in some ways, it doesn't really make sense, you know. And we're out here trying to make the world a better place, and if we can stop one woman from being abused by some loser, we're close to our goal in making the world a better place. I want to say something about violence in the city of Chicago. I'm always harping on violence in the city of Chicago. A man and a seven-year-old girl was shot, okay? Today. This is today, Thursday. Yesterday, I was talking about a 10-year-old being shot, playing in front of his own home, sitting. There's people, young people being shot, kids, children being shot, sitting on their porches, walking down the street, playing in the park. It's pathetic. And I was also saying yesterday that the Chicago Police Department was having a summit, bringing minds in from all around America to try to figure out how to stop the violence here in the city of Chicago. And I'm waiting to hear any solutions that they've came up with. They call this a summit, a meeting of all these minds. I mean, I don't think you need a meeting of all these minds, all these people from around America trying to help Chicago bring down its crime rate. What I think you need is some good ideas, some good efforts. And another thing, I think you need more police officers out on the street. That's not rocket science. That's a given. They can talk all they want because that's all it is. That's all the summit is talk, 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 talk. Maybe it's good for the media. Maybe they're trying to, you know, get this in the media, but stop talking and start doing. That's my thing. Stop talking and start doing. People are dying out here on these streets, especially on the south and west sides of the city. Stop talking and stop doing. 7-year-old girl was shot in Chicago. And these people, every time someone gets shot, they start instead of trying to go out and find a perpetrator who shot these people. Because if you don't find them, the perpetrator is going to, they're going to do this again. I can tell you what they're talking about. They are talking about in the summit, and I'm just guessing, but I believe they're talking about gangbangers. I believe they're talking about gangbangers who get out of, who go to jail for gun crimes, and they are let out of the jail too soon to walk the streets again, pick up another gun, and they shoot someone. They're talking about criminals being, the criminal justice system not being as good as it should. They feel that gang members, gang bangers who are locked up, who have committed gun crimes, should not get out of jail as early as the courts are letting them out. This is what they're talking about. What they should be doing is hiring more police officers in some of these crime-ridden neighborhoods. If they can't handle it, bring in the National Guard, bring in the U.S. Army. I've talked about this a number of times on the show, but I don't know if they're listening. I don't think they, I'm pretty sure they probably heard what I'm saying before. They may have heard what I'm saying before and did not act on it because we still having crime. And every time a child is shot, Mary Emanuel, he seems furious, but yet he will not hire more police officers. And he will probably say, well, we don't have the money. You sure in the hell don't have the money with all these lawsuits up your ass. People are suing the city left and right. People are suing Chicago. Every time I look around, every time I turn on the internet or on the news or video, people are suing the city for something or other. Police shootings, they're suing the city. Police harassment, suing the city. Most of the suits are, most of the suits deal with police brutality that is on video. Undisputable proof on video. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank my guest author, Lisa Orman. She talks domestic violence, and we had a lot of commentary on the show. We talked about Donald Trump. Oh, man, I got to say a little, some more about Simone Biles. This is the greatest gymnast in the world. Simone Biles, simply the greatest gymnast ever. And if you haven't heard about her, if you don't watch Olympics, if you're not into sports, you should be into this. This is great. As I'm speaking, you can always find a video of her doing her flips and all this kind of thing, and she does them well on YouTube. And just put Simone Biles or Olympics 2016 or Rio Olympics. She's great. She's wonderful. And I've said this before, and I'm gonna say it again. I am totally a fan of Simone Biles, and I wish her all the luck in the world. I wish her good things, which I know will come, because she's the most famous gymnast in the world, because she is the best gymnast in the world. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. on my show, 347-857-1762. Let's do this. All right, it's still hot, folks. I hope you guys are keeping cool out there, especially if you're in the city of Chicago. folks, Simone Biles is on the cover of Huffington Post. She's on the cover of USA Today. I'm pretty sure she's on the cover of every newspaper in the United States. She is the greatest. I just can't stop talking about her. I think I've talked about her yesterday and totally a fan. Totally a fan. All right. This school cops are tasering American children. We will probably talk about that on Monday. I mean, I'm going to be off for 3 days. If you want to, you can always podcast the shows. I've got a lot of shows here, and you can always listen to a show, even if you're not listening live. That's what I love about podcasting. You can always listen to any number of my shows anytime, any day of the week, anytime you want, right here on Blog Talk Radio, right here on my website, right here. And enjoy. We'll be off for 3 days. I'm going to take off the weekends to do some writing because I'm doing some writing. And I'm wondering if I should continue. I love writing, and I'm going to always be into it. I'll always be a writer. I'll always be an author. So we'll see where it goes from there. I just was told I had 90 minutes left into the show. So we're going to be off for 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We will be back here on Monday. And that's going to be fun. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to have some great guests. I have some great guests. I truly do hope you guys are will be here for that. So I want to thank you for tuning into the show, enjoying the show. I want to thank all my guests, all the callers, and all everybody who's been a part of the show. And I will see you next week. You guys out there, stay safe, have fun, stay positive, make the world a better place.